This is episode 2 Delta of the Software Freedom Law Show for Tuesday, August 10th, 2010. This is Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn.
This is the Software Freedom Law Show.
I believe it is.
Well, that makes it so.
Okay.
We're here in our various roles, I guess, today.
I'm drinking out of the mug Fab got me.
Oh, is that? I was wondering about what these mugs were.
These are the mugs that Fab got me.
What are they?
Well, so I went to this place in Germany. We visited this, strangely enough, a brewery. I don't even drink beer. But we visited this brewery in 1989 when I was in Germany, and it's the only mug I've ever liked. So Fab bought a bunch.
So wait, you had a...
I have one of my own. This is not one of my own. I had one, exactly.
Are they,
one.
They're the same size?
They're exactly the
anyway,
same.
Anyway, this is kind of silly because you guys can't see it, but it's like it's a stein, and it's got like a narrower lip than it does bottom.
That's true.
So it's kind of a funny shape to drink out of.
But it's the only mug I've ever liked. And so Fab bought, but they wouldn't ship outside of Germany. So Fab bought them in Germany and brought them to The Hague to give to
That's
me.
That's so nice of him.
I brought him some proprietary software junk that he wanted to.
Did you?
Well, it was paraphernalia of a video game that's proprietary software. I did not actually buy him proprietary software. I would not have done that.
I was about to
I bought him a t-shirt about some proprietary software game he likes and some other like random trinket related to the game.
Huh.
But they were not actually software. So okay. I didn't have an ethical problem buying them.
So proprietary software paraphernalia, that's hilarious.
That's what it is. It's a t-shirt like, and it was like a some sort of deck of cards or something related to the game. It had like characters from the game on it or something. I don't know. Fab
well,
can,
it's cool that you had
Fab
a
can tell us on Identica when we post this
That
show.
Was at Guadac, right?
Well, I saw it because I went to Guadac on my vacation. On my vacation, I go to free software conferences. So
representing a different organization.
Yes, I was representing the Free Software Foundation at that conference.
But you are a director.
That is correct.
But you were representing them before you were a director.
It's very confusing.
It is very confusing, and we're going to confuse things further because in this episode, this show, we're talking about.
It's an episode, isn't it? It's going to be an episode.
Everything's an episode with us. we're going to be talking about some of the activities of the Software Freedom Conservancy, of which Bradley is the executive director?
No, well, I'm president.
You're president.
Yeah.
And of which I'm an officer. But in this instance, I think we're going to be talking with Bradley with his conservancy hat on, with his president of the conservancy, and me with my pro bono lawyer to the conservancy.
I hate that whole hat thing. I use it myself because it's the only option.
You use it all the time. That's why
I use
it.
I hate it, though. I don't have a better metaphor.
That's funny because I only think of using it now because we're continuing the imagery that you've established so firmly.
Yeah, I actually got that from the free software world. That's a very classic. Well, I think it's actually a classic. It's a bit off topic, but I think it's valuable to our listeners. We have this classic problem in the free software world, particularly now, because people have affiliations with their projects, but they also have employers which have an interest in the project often. So you take, let's take GNOME, because I was just at Guadac, for example. So you've got a bunch of GNOME developers, some of whom work for various companies like Red Hat, like Owen Taylor, who's working on GNOME Shell. He's been a GNOME guy since before he worked for Red Hat, but he also works for Red Hat. So he has these different hats. He's the GNOME Shell
maintainer.
And
it's really confusing because a lot of times what makes these developers appealing for companies to hire is that they're so involved in certain communities. But you know, actually, this is a topic for a whole other show about where lines should be drawn and what kind of behavior is appropriate when you're acting in different capacities, like when you're acting as a volunteer for a project or acting as an employee. Most of the time, these things don't really come up that much because most of the time, as Bradley will make fun of me that I say this all the time, most of the time, everybody's interests are aligned, so you don't really have a conflict situation. But sometimes you do, and we should worry about those situations, and that's one of the things that we at Software Freedom Law Center are concerned about. So we'll probably talk about that more in the future.
Yeah, I was just trying to remember the first time I heard free software people using that. And I think it was, and strangely enough, I have this microphone sitting on top of proceedings from an old Perl conference. It was actually in the Perl community when O'Reilly was heavily involved with Perl. So there were people working on Perl who were also employees of O'Reilly, and they used to say, well, with my O'Reilly hat on, with my Perl hat on type thing. That's probably where I picked that up in like the late 90s.
It's really descriptive. I mean, it's got good imagery. I mean, it's easy to understand what people are talking about.
It sounds kind of silly because then Red Hat took it all the way and then made literally with your Red Hat hat. So there is a literal thing there, which makes it even worse.
In any event.
So okay, so I'm going to...
And this is a follow-up show as well.
It's a follow-up to 2.9, right? Because I'm paging down to make sure it's 2.9. Yeah, so in 2.9 we talked about...
Motions for Judgment.
Well, we talked about motions that SVLC filed on Conservancy's behalf. So that's where this whole thing comes from. So I'm president of the Conservancy and a client of SVLC. And SVLC filed on Conservancy's behalf, and also Eric Anderson, who's also a client of SVLC. SVLC filed this motion specifically with regard to the default judgment for Westinghouse.
Right. And now you may be sick of hearing about the BusyBox related lawsuits and compliance and stuff, but
they're not sick of it. we had a request on
Identica.
But
that's what
that
I was about
covered.
To say is that we did get a request, and we're trying to stick with where possible shows that have come from requests since we asked for. We asked for you all to tell us what you wanted to hear, so where we can do that, we are trying to. So this is an example of a show that we're answering a listener's request.
I guess so, but
it is.
It wasn't part of that original group of requests.
No, but we're getting you know, the trickle of requests has not stopped. I mean, we've been getting them periodically, and I don't see why an earlier one would have.
Well, I was just worried the people who made early requests topics we haven't covered.
No, we got a lot of requests, so we've got good fodder and good suggestions, and we basically think about them every time we choose a new show. So
well, this one's timely.
This one is timely.
So if you go back and listen to 2.9, and you may want to listen to 2.9 first if you haven't already,
because that explains what a default judgment is, and it explains the whole background for this act, the what's happened now.
So the judge granted the motion. And actually, we talked about this in 2.9, where we made, or SVLC, I guess.
And Aaron was here on that show as well,
That's correct. Yeah. He's not here right now.
He's not
even here in his office. He's away.
He is. He's out of the office.
So we can't even drag him in.
Not even
so anyway,
if we wanted to.
But he did talk about how there was the default judgment and then arguing the alternative summary judgment stuff. The whole argument alternative thing. So actually, the judge, I'll go to the very end of the judge's order. The judge said at the end, I'm not going to consider your motion for summary judgment because I'm granting default judgment.
Right.
Which that's because.
It just reinforces that the way that lawyers argue cases and the way they think about legal issues.
Right. So it didn't actually ever get considered for summary judgment because default judgment was better, quote unquote, and was granted.
Right.
So.
And it was the first thing that Conservancy asked for.
Correct, and because it is better, right?
Can we just say that that neither the Conservancy or the SFLC is the EFF?
I don't know why people think anything that happens legal related in anything related to software must be the EFF. That's like a weird assumption.
Yeah, and it happens a lot.
Harold Velta's not the EFF either, by the way.
That's true.
Even though he does enforcement.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think
and
that's...
And the FSF is not the EFF.
Yeah.
People have made that mistake before.
They used to a long time ago. I haven't seen that one in a while. That one we used to see all the time back when I was at FSF and would do the booths, which I don't do booths anymore. But back when I used to do the booths, that was constant confusion. And then they used to put us right next to each other at conferences because they're like, well, these two organizations have something vaguely in common.
Every time we have a booth for SFLC at a conference, which isn't that often, but we have it at OSCON the past couple of years and at Scale. And at OSCON, almost always there's someone that comes over to us and say, I love what you guys do. I gave to the EFF. So you're like, well.
Yeah. Well, that's more. That's.
I'm glad you're supporting the EFF.
Yeah.
They're a good organization.
But you were next to Apache this time.
Yeah.
So that was
I mean, we weren't next to them
next
this time.
A client instead of a
exactly.
Anyway, so because EFF's not a client of SVLC.
The EFF is not a client. Sometimes they're a partner.
I guess that's true.
Sometimes
that just
work
makes
together.
It more confusing, though.
I guess so.
And people are confused enough about Conservancy and SVLC and FSF.
But happily, we're two organizations that are working in fields that need nonprofit work. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that we can work together sometimes.
So anyway, back to this default judgment.
I'm going to keep derailing you. No, I'm just kidding.
So, but, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of stuff in there. I like reading that. But
I guess it's more interesting for me to read because I know all the... Because obviously as Conservancy's GPL enforcement agent for BusyBox, so I do all this work of checking out these violations. So seeing a judge opine, I guess, or talk about facts that I discovered and so forth in a violation is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And maybe it won't be as interesting to listeners to read.
I'm betting not, but, you know.
Okay.
I think probably most of the people who were interested probably have already taken a look.
Mm-hmm.
But,
So, what the interesting thing for the future of GPL enforcement, which Conservancy is going to continue to do for BusyBox, is that this is the first time, I believe, in the United States that a permanent injunction for distribution has ever been granted.
Now, that said, I think we need to bear in mind the fact that it is a default judgment. So basically, the situation here is that the defendant didn't argue the case.
True.
So so the victory is somewhat tempered by the fact that it is a default judgment. And so, you know, I agree with you that it's an important step and it's different than what's come before.
Are you going to go join that Slashdot thread where they were arguing whether this was a major accomplishment or an important accomplishment?
No, I just...
They were arguing this on Slashdot, whether it was major or important.
I'm just saying that we can't really necessarily blow it out of proportion because we don't know how the same circumstances would go down. And, you know, I mean, we have our beliefs based on our positions and our lawyer being lawyers in the case. Normally, as lawyers, you wouldn't necessarily talk about ongoing litigation, but this is a decision related to one of the defendants. Mm-hmm. But I just would say my review is just don't blow it out of proportion. I think it's really interesting and I think it is important, but I think it's not necessarily as groundbreakingly important as people have said.
Well, yeah, others have said that. I haven't said that.
No, but I'm just sort of couching the issue.
Yeah, obviously what we want is compliance with the GPL. And that's really the unfortunate thing. We are having trouble getting that here with Westinghouse. Because Westinghouse isn't cooperating to settle the dispute.
And they're not cooperating because?
Because their lawyers quit on them?
Well, I mean...
That's in the order, too. The lawyers were allowed to withdraw.
Right.
They don't want anything to do with it anymore.
Well, I mean, part of it is just when you've got a company in bankruptcy proceedings and you've got this whole... All these other issues, including, you know, no matter what kind of judgment there is and what kind of amount that that the Conservancy is entitled to under the decision, mm-hmm. it's still all subject to, you know, what assets are actually held and the lineup of creditors and that.
Conservancy is exploring options with its legal counsel to resolve that problem. That's
legal,
what I've been saying publicly.
Legal counsel wouldn't say anything about it. So.
That's exactly correct. But that's what I've been saying with regard to that.
That's still another reason. You're right. It's still another way that this decision should be taken in perspective.
Right. But I think the important thing to tell people is that injunction's not a preferred outcome necessarily for GPL enforcement. The preferred outcome is compliance with the license. Actually, people continuing to distribute the free software, but also giving the source code.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and I think that's one of the things that I think we sometimes lose sight of when we have litigation that gets publicized is that, you know, the truth is that we would rather not be in litigation at all.
That's true as well. Conservancy certainly doesn't want to spend its time as a plaintiff. When left with a choice between continued infringement, continued distribution of binary firmwares and televisions without an offer for source code, without any real hope that the users are going to get the source code for the particular firmware in question, when it's either that or stopping them from distributing, we have to pick stopping from distributing. Because those are the only two choices left.
Right. Well, I think we've talked about this in previous shows, that to just not... to not enforce the license takes its bite away, a lot of its provisions.
Yeah, somebody said to me recently, if I wanted that to happen, I would have licensed my code under the BSD license. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the outcome. If you just allow people to distribute, you couldn't comply with GPL, just keep distributing binaries. It might as well have been the BSD license.
Yeah, I mean, it's also just, it's not fair for those companies that are complying.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with that. I don't know if those companies have the same reaction or not, but
I'm sure some do and some don't. I mean, yeah. You know.
I think a lot of companies may just feel like, well, we're complying, so we're good, and they're not really concerned about what other people are doing, mm-hmm. which I think is the wrong approach and the wrong way to think about it, but I think they're not maybe not looking long-term at why GPL is important. I mean, their goal is not necessarily the same goals as the nonprofit individual developers. Their goal is really to make sure that the code always stays free, and that's not necessarily the goal of any particular company, I don't think.
Well, it depends on the company.
I don't know. Well, we can have our arguments about for-profit companies. I don't think there's many for-profit companies whose primary goal is to keep software free as in freedom. It might be a secondary goal that helps them reach their other goals.
I guess that's probably true. I mean, although it's just hard to talk about in this way and prioritizing other people's goals.
I think what it is that people have different hats. So you might know employees of particular companies who, in their personal capacity, wearing their project hat, want to keep the code free as in free. But wearing their company hat, they might be indifferent.
I also think there are companies that make ideological choices, and that goes across the board from companies that are concerned about environmental issues and choose to only seek their profit in ways that are consistent with some ideological view. And that's
true. Like Evan from StatusNet has made a lot of choices about trying to mm-hmm. make sure that his services are free as in freedom, and are distributed and disjoint and federated network services. So there is that, and I've seen his company act in ways that seem good because of that. But on the other hand, it's also in his business interest because he's trying to differentiate himself from Twitter and Facebook and so forth and show that he has a different type of product. So,
right, so it's in his financial interest to do that as well.
Right, exactly.
But it's great when those things are lined up.
Are aligned? When their interests are aligned.
I know, you were going to say that.
Well, you say it.
I do. It's just a handy phrase.
I don't know. It's a lawyerly phrase. Like contemplate. This
there's something
this
wrong with
license
contemplate?
Doesn't contemplate the issue of blah.
I contemplate things.
Yeah, no,
you don't contemplate?
I mean it in terms of a text contemplating. That's a lawyer thing.
I find that I often say, I use the word intend a lot more than I used to, now that I'm a lawyer. Talk about intentions.
So should we say anything else about it, this default judgment?
I don't know. Is there anything else that Conservancy...
People should be... Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to ask if there's anything Conservancy would want... want to say about it. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably people should know that Conservancy's primary job is not enforcing GPL. We generally provide a whole buffet of services.
Sounds delicious.
To member projects. Some member projects of Conservancy are under copyleft licenses, so one of the services that Conservancy provides is assistance and enforcement. But we're also doing all sorts of other much more mundane, much less... actually, frankly, exciting services like managing their funds and making sure they're spent in a way.
But no less important.
Yeah, they're. In fact, I think they're more important in some ways because that's the longevity of the project you're talking about. Whether or not you succeed in one particular enforcement case probably doesn't impact the longevity of the project. If you never did enforcement, it might, but any one enforcement case probably is not make or break for the future of a project.
So. Boy, the real problem here is that you're... speaking on behalf of Conservancy about this, and I then am in the default role of interviewer, but as Conservancy's pro bono lawyer, I don't want to ask any, it's funny, because lawyers will always say, you don't want to talk about any ongoing litigation. So, so I'm sort of like,
Well,
maybe
we talk
just
briefly
move on
about
to another topic.
The other things you do for Conservancy. That are related to it's funny because you don't work very much on enforcement. All the other legal services that Conservancy needs, we get from you primarily. You personally.
That's true.
Not wearing your personal capacity hat.
Sometimes wearing my personal capacity hat. It depends.
But generally speaking, you are the person who's doing the legal services for Conservancy that are not related to enforcement.
That's true. But I think we've done other shows on them.
That's true.
Those
like the Form 990 show where we went through the Form 990.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that as you said before, those less exciting services or activities of the Conservancy are not as fun to hear about. And they're really important that they get done, but I don't think anyone wants to hear about the contract we negotiated for a conference. It's just not... It's really important that it gets done. It's nice that it gets done.
Karen gets good deals with venues to get the conference to run as cheaply as possible. and to have the least amount of attrition. There's this evil thing that conferences do, this attrition thing.
It's you understand why they. I mean, I understand why they do it.
You basically for people who've never heard this phrase before. When you go to a conference, often there's a hotel associated with a conference, and basically to get that cheap conference rate, because there's usually like $50 off a night, something like that, that you get off from your bill when you stay at the conference hotel. Well, they are basically being able to guarantee that rate because somebody's promising them if they don't fill the hotel rooms with conference attendees, you're going to pay for those rooms anyway. And so
yeah,
that Karen's good at getting the number of attrition requirements down.
It turns out that maybe this is a good thing to know if you're not a lawyer, and most of my non-lawyer friends are surprised to hear it, that almost all contracts are negotiable. So if you're given there are some form contracts that you can't, you know, that the people who give them to you are very unwilling to change them because they're, you know, a standardized form and they'd rather not do business with you than have to change their form. But a lot of times employment contracts, conference contracts, all sorts of things, they often can be changed if you have a good reason why you think they should be changed.
Now, I will note, generally speaking, the GPL is not a contract. It's a copyright license. And unless you're at some open core company, it is a non-negotiable license. You have to comply with the GPL, and you can't get out of it.
Yeah, that's not a contract that individuals are negotiating. True generally, enough. It's a, as you say.
Sometimes companies are trying to negotiate. They want to get out of the GPL. That happens. And this is the whole open core business model is basically we sell you out of the GPL.
Well, actually, maybe if you think of the GPL in that way, it's the same as those companies that have standardized contracts that they're not willing to change, right? It's sort of don't use the software or don't use our services. We're not willing to change.
It's copying, modifying, distributing, conveying, propagating.
I'm trying to draw the analogy to say don't use our services if you're not willing to take our contract. And it's sort of like a similar mentality.
Well, the reason I jump on that is because I think there's a lot of FUD out there about GPL that if you just use the software somehow, you're going to have all sorts of
problems. What I really meant to say was don't use GPL software in your product. I mean,
don't distribute GPL software as part of your product.
Well, if you're using it as your in your product, well, actually, that's true. You might not be necessarily. Depending on the
distribution. That's why Affero GPL exists, right? You could be using GPL software as a network service and you're not distributing. That's the whole reason we need AGPL in the first place.
That is true. I'm glad you clarified for me.
You
knew what I meant.
I'm the best kind of correct. I'm technically correct.
So, we are talking about conferences and, you know, in talking about negotiating them, but we've also had a lot of conferences recently. I think, I don't know what it is that most free software conferences are in the summer? It's not most, but
well, there used to be this time years ago when there was the OSCON Linux World Stack. So OSCON and Linux World would always be for a couple of years there in the early 2000s, back to back. And that was really horrible. It's the only time I ever had to do laundry in a hotel. Like I went down and found, because a lot of, like, many people don't know this, but most hotels do have self-service washing machines, as it turns out, particularly chain hotels. So I actually had to do that because I was 2 weeks straight not going home. And I almost did that again, although I came home for a weekend to do laundry in this case, because I went to OSCON and then I went to GWADOC.
Yeah. And then this week, DevConf was in New York and we both went to that.
Yeah, I was only there for one day.
I only went for a couple of days. I did show up for they screened Patent Absurdity. There were good talks all week. I was just very busy.
Well, I felt really bad, but I usually like to go to a whole conference when I'm speaking at it. I think that's the right thing to do as a speaker. And I sort of warned to internets that I wasn't doing that for DevConf because of this thing where I was at conferences for 17 days straight.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's a really long time to be at conferences.
Yeah, it's true.
And I'm going to a conference. I'm going to two conferences next week. I'm speaking in D.C. at a Usenix conference on health. Basically, there's a panel on security of in the medical profession. I think it's about medical devices, actually. And on a panel.
Karen, we didn't actually cover we've covered the medical devices issue on the Ogcast before, but you've since had a paper out, which we didn't really mention. I think Evan's speech that we used the audio from last week mentioned it a little bit.
It promised it, actually.
Yeah, but you have not really talked about it. Do you want to talk about the paper and encourage people to read it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we have a full podcast on that, which is, I forget which, we'll say which. Oh, here it is. It's episode 2-1. Medical devices in Karen's heart. And so we sort of lay out the whole basic idea in there, but we did publish the paper and it's available on SFLC's website. And I'm really excited that it's out there and it got a good amount of attention. So I'm really happy about that. And having published the paper meant that I resulted in getting invited to this conference where I'm participating in the conference with a representative from the FDA who I had talked about these issues in the past, and also a researcher who was responsible for the study where they maliciously, well, actually they weren't really malicious, but they were able to hack into the medical devices. And they weren't malicious because they were doing it to show whether or not the devices had vulnerabilities. And publish their results and suggestions for making them safer. Anyway, so I'm really excited about that. I know at least one other person on the panel also has an implanted medical device. So, it should be fun. I think from what I'm starting to learn that there's a very high percentage of people who are advocates for a position or for safety in healthcare have implanted medical devices. It's really amazing. It makes sense, but, you know, I would have thought there was a lot more, you know, just people who are generally concerned or people who had parents or siblings or children, but it turns out that there are a lot of people who themselves had to go through the process of finding out about their own medical device and got interested in the issue, and it made them passionate to pursue it. So it should be interesting.
And then after that, you're going...
Oh, and then after that, I'm going to LinuxCon. And I'm not sure...
I'm going to be at LinuxCon one day. Turned out I had to go to the Free Software Foundation's board meeting weekend. So I wasn't going to go, but then I'm going to have to be in Boston then 2 days later anyway. So
I'm going to be talking very briefly about the medical devices issues as well. I'm sharing a session. And so that'll be at LinuxCon as well.
On which day?
Wednesday.
Yeah,
Wednesday morning.
I'll only be there on Thursday. And I'm not speaking, but I'll be walking around on Thursday. And so, John Masters is doing the Quiz Bowl this year.
Oh, really?
Instead of Jeremy Allison did it last year.
He did a great job. That was fun.
Yeah. So I guess I don't get to assist this year because John Masters probably doesn't need me. But that was, John Masters does did for a while the Linux summary podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The Linux kernel mailing list summary podcast, which. It seems to be defunct.
Really?
Well, I never get anything in the feed anymore. He said he was going to switch to weekly, which he did for a while, and then maybe he moved the feed and I didn't notice. That could be, but I haven't. Nothing's come through on the feed in a long time.
Oh.
So I guess it was too much work.
Well, we ourselves have had a bit of an erratic schedule lately, but we're trying.
So, is there anything else you want to let our listeners know about before our next episode, which may not be right day.
I can't think of anything now. Do you, in your role as any of your roles?
Roles like dinner rolls?
Roles like your role as conservancy
like
president.
Like role playing? Like fifth level?
Well, let's get out our dice and see paladin. If there's anything else we need to talk about today.
Yeah. Do I have to make a saving throw to see if I can finish the podcast?
Yes.
Like I don't even have a 20D anymore. I used to always have a 20D. Like somewhere on my desk or something. I don't anymore. Because 20, I mean, I can understand if you don't have like the little triangular four-sided die, right? I mean, who has that all the time? But usually I always had a 20-sided die.
I think you're outing me now as not having ever played
D&D.
D&D.
Well, isn't that something people are proud of? That they have
not
never?
Having played? I don't know. I was kind of unusual in engineering school. For someone for anybody involved in technology our age, the chances that they were into D&D is very high.
Well, usually AD&D, because if they would have been younger to be in D&D, or older, rather.
Because
D&D came out in 71, right?
Yeah, but...
AD&D came out only a few years later, so...
Well, that's true, but...
Most people played AD&D, I think.
Yeah, but I think from the outsiders, you wouldn't make much of a distinction.
What? Of course you would. I mean, there's two extra races, right, in AD&D, and there's I mean, paladins. I just mentioned paladins. They didn't even exist in D&D.
And what relation does that have to Magic the Gathering?
Well, Magic the Gathering was...
which was very popular when I went to college, but that was...
Well, the people younger than me in college. So the people who were freshmen when I were seniors played Magic. I felt Magic was... it was a trap. Because you had to buy a deck and you had to pay extra money to get certain cards to set up your deck. And that didn't seem right to me. Because with D&D, or even AD&D, you only bought a few things. And then once you had them, you could just make up your own campaigns. And you weren't under the control necessarily of the company that produced the materials for the game. I just thought that wasn't a good way. I thought it was manipulation to get people to give money to this company rather than AD&D, which you could make up your own stuff once you had the basic rules. And in fact, if you knew the basic rules, all you needed was the dice.
But how is that related to Software Freedom?
Well, there actually have been people who fought with the AD&D people, because the AD&D has been acquired and licensed, and there's all sorts of weirdness about the whole history of it, of who owns it and so forth. And various times, free software projects trying to implement AD&D type games have run into aggressive copyright and trademark, and I guess no patents, but trademark and copyright enforcement from the AD&D people. So it does relate, actually.
That's funny.
Not that I think games are a very big priority.
Well, so I don't think we have anything else from SFLC. Is there anything else conservancy related that we want to bring up?
I don't think so. Not in
no,
the
anything we'll else talk about FSF related? Later. This is what I was saying by roles. I just came back to what I was saying before.
FSF related. Well, FSF recently rebranded their website and stuff, so people might want to look at that.
Oh.
So they are trying various different new campaigns to encourage people to use free software.
I just renewed my membership.
Mine goes every month.
Okay.
So I have to keep that associate member one. Because if I don't renew every month, then I lose that number.
And I
won't be associate member one.
I think they have a grace period now.
There is a grace period.
Yeah.
Actually, I felt I was in the grace period for a while because my credit card expired and I didn't realize.
Oh, no.
But yeah, you can recover. You just have to pay your back dues. That's the way we do I say we because I just was still there when this was rolled out.
And now you're affiliated.
Not affiliated again, but I wasn't for some period of time. But the original design of the system was that you could keep your number if you paid your back dues. And if you just wanted to restart again as a new member, you got a new member number. So right. It was a way to encourage people to pay the back dues as well.
Right.
Because then they could keep their number. So I did pay all my back dues, so I kept one. And there was some discussion that when they imported into a new software system, I might lose the number, which I vehemently argued that I didn't want to lose it. Because I've been associate member one since November 2002. I can't not be.
Well, you can.
Well,
I'm the best kind of correct.
It would be kind of sad if I was not associate member one. It can't be zero either. You know why, right?
Why?
Because the original way we did it, I think it's done differently now, but the original way the database was designed, it was just taking the IDs auto-assigned by SQL. And when you insert into an SQL table, you would never get zero back as a serial. You would get one first. So
you're one for now.
Not zero. It would be cool to be member zero.
It would be.
I'm sort of am member zero, especially since I joined before the program was launched.
There was no prisoner zero, was there?
For in which thing?
The prisoner.
oh yeah, that was that's one of those series I don't like because it ended before it was supposed to end.
Right.
I don't like it when they do that.
Anyway, thank you for joining us.
Okay.
And we could chat about TV and games for a long time, but take a look at the Hard Device paper.
Mm-hmm.
Feel free to read the default judgment. I think it makes for interesting reading.
And if anybody wants to send me a really nice 20D. That I could have on my desk since I no longer have my 20D. They could. I'm going to get like 100 20-sided dice in the email. Not an email. But maybe people will scan them in. But I'm probably going to get a bunch in the mail, aren't I, now that I asked.
I doubt it.
It would be kind of funny if I did.
It would be funny. Okay. Anyway, see you next time. No!
We don't see
We don't
anybody.
See. Talk to you next time.
Okay.
Software Freedom Law Show is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This show is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States License.